Featuring the NASA Everyday Quintet, Cindy Brown, Kenny Carroll, Nana Malaya, and more on Friday, September 19, 2025 at 7 p.m. at E-Life Restaurant, 9033 Central Avenue, Capitol Heights, Maryland. Details, UBCNDC at yahoo.com, 240-832-7203. Thank you.
Yo, peace, this is Rod Stars.
Peace, this is G1, and together we're Rebel Diaz. When we in the DMV, you know we're listening to that People Power Radio, WPFW Washington, your station for jazz and justice. Let's go.
I don't want to be like Mike.
Say what you say, say what?
I don't want to be like Mike.
Before Magic's knees go permanently south for the winter.
I don't want to be like Mike.
Changing up the guard quicker than fear brings down doo-doo. Young bro.
He never saw Elgin Baylor play during his day or Oscar Robinson.
Flash the dice roll back. The big O was jackknifing through all them bodies.
I didn't know nothing about it.
Peace, 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 and welcome to The Collision with Sports and Politics Collide. I'm Atan Thomas. Dave Zirin is doing big things overseas, so he's going to tell you all about it when he comes back. We have a great show for you today. Later on, we're going to have Dr. Angel Jones, PhD. She has a lot that she wants to talk about, and it's going to be great. But Chuck, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing great. How about yourself, Atan?
I'm doing good. So let's start off with this because, you know, I've been watching last night. The news broke that Jimmy Fallon had been fired and, you know, indefinite suspension, whatever. And I looked at the clip of what he said and I was like, that wasn't too much. Is there a different clip? Did I miss something? I was expecting him to go full, you know, Samuel L. Jackson and A Time to Kill about you. But I was like, that's all? Help me out. What was your response when you saw that he was indefinitely suspended?
Well, I'm still stuck on full Samuel L. Jackson and A Time to Kill. I hope he burns in hell. You know, seen Dave Chappelle do that bit. Yeah. I can almost say the same that I would say with every single person who has been given fake outrage or been fired with regards to comments on Charlie Kirk. Mm-hmm. There's nothing there. There's really nothing there. And when you start to like peel back critics, whether it's Jimmy Kimmel or of Jimmy Kimmel or others who say words about Charlie Kirk, they almost say their comments. They always say their comments, what they said. And I'm going down. I'm saying, I don't see anything wrong. Or you're talking about things and you're saying, where's the lie? So I think what we're really dealing with is a hysteria. We're dealing with a national hysteria and a national hysteria that has been completely manipulated, that has been not based in any type of truth to Charlie Kirk's this great Christian without saying great Christian things. He's being whitewashed. We are seeing pictures of him alongside MLK and Malcolm X. I mean, it's mind-boggling, but we have to understand that we can't use regular reason right now. That we have to understand that this is a concerted effort to make Charlie Kirk a martyr, to pass laws, to get people fired, to change the culture. And we know, as someone, as the Collision, who uses sports and talks about sports on a platform to change popular culture, we know that's what they're doing. If they could get popular culture, then they could change politics themselves. So, you know, Jimmy Kimmel in many ways is just one casualty of that. But, you know, I think the final thing I want to say is corporations also follow culture. And during the 2020 Black Lives Matter uprising, we were seeing Black Lives Matter signs all over the place. And then there were these questions. Oh, does Target say, I'm picking Target for a reason, does Target care about Black Lives? And the answer was always, of course they don't, but they do care about selling their products. So when you change culture, they felt it was good to put Black Lives Matter in their advertisements, to hire more Black people with intentionality, knowing that Black people are discriminated against. And then we come to this other new era, this quote unquote, and I hate the term anti-woke era, and we're seeing the same corporations now are doing an about face, that are embracing white supremacy and white supremacists openly because it will sell their product. So we have to be clear, corporations only follow the dollar, and that we have to create an environment that they will follow the, a dollar associated with justice.
So is it this, that that segment of society that agrees with everything that Charlie Kirk stood for, that they wrap around all of his hateful rhetoric, you know, and they hold on to it like a warm blanket, that society, that group, that demographic is a much larger number than we maybe anticipated or that we think, because if they're as much of a large enough number to move the needle on what corporations do, then that means that the opposition has to be even louder.
That's right. Yeah, no, you're exactly right. The opposition has to be louder because you have manipulators, right? The manipulator in chief is Donald Trump, who less than 24 hours after Charlie Kirk was murdered was blaming the left. You didn't even have a suspect. You didn't even know who it was. And then you hear Stephen Miller and you hear J.D. Vance and you hear all the talk show hosts. You don't even know who the suspect is. How can you possibly lay blame? So we know right off of the bat, starting with the president of the United States and so many others, Charlie Kirk's death was used to manipulate masses, not find out who actually the killer is. And, you know, there's a whole conversation about that. I'm not convinced that this Tyler Robbins is acting alone. But what we're talking about is manipulation. And then there are masses who don't know what's going on, who follow the narrative, don't have time to look at the details of what was actually said by Jimmy Kimmel or anyone else. And since I'm here, I didn't say it at the top. I will say what Jimmy Kimmel said. He said the MAGA gang is desperately trying to characterize this kid who murdered Charlie Kirk as anything other than one of them, doing everything they can to score political points on it. In between the finger pointing, there was grieving. This is not how an adult grieves the murder of someone he calls a friend. This is how a four-year-old mourns a goldfish. He was speaking about Donald Trump, of course. And I don't see anything that's like wrong there or inaccurate there. He would be 100% accurate about Trump's behavior right after Charlie Kirk. And it's very dangerous behavior because it is swaying the masses and it does impact policies. And Stephen Miller and Trump is talking about how now they need to go after protesters of all varieties, those who are against police. When you look at everything they're latching on, and we don't even know that much about Tyler Robinson. I am not giving up on the fact that Tyler Robinson could be a far-right groiper. I'm not going to get into all that. I'm not giving up on the fact, without more investigation, that there may be a tie to Israel. I'm not giving up on the fact that maybe it's tied to Epstein. You know, we don't like Charlie Kirk because he says a lot of bigoted things. But the truth is, he has a whole spectrum of enemies because he was poking some serious bears that include Jeffrey Epstein and the fear that he may sway and turn a little bit on Israel as a former really strong supporter. So this should have been framed as a whodunit from the beginning. And instead of being framed as a whodunit and showing the spectrum of his enemies, including other white nationalists, it was framed as the left did this. And that's the problem.
But now we're at a point where they don't even want you talking about it. They don't want you even discussing it. We're going to talk about it later with Dr. Angel Jones. But you know, we're going to talk about the Washington Post journalists.
Karen Ataya.
Karen Ataya, right, who was fired from the Washington Post because she literally quoted him. She quoted directly what Charlie Kirk said about black women. Why would a black woman not respond to that or discuss it? And she is an editor. So right now we're getting to the point where they don't even want you to quote him. And when you're and people are getting fired for actually quoting him.
Yeah.
That's so if you can get fired and it's considered hate speech or whatever the reason why you're getting fired for quoting somebody, why isn't what they actually said considered hate speech?
Hey, listen, that's a great question. It's not considered a hate speech what he said, because their army is saying fake news. We've seen this before. Fake news. Trump's MO is fake news. Shoot the messenger figuratively and say that's not true. And anyone, even it's not true when your own quotes defy what is being said. So we're in this time of hysteria now, and hysteria times are very scary, because hysteria leads to laws and quick laws in quick fashion. So we have to be clear about that, and we have to, you know, butt up against everything that they're doing. Show facts. So if you say political violence is coming from the left, and I saw J.D. Vance went on a tirade yesterday, well, we have to show the stats that, you know, close to 70% of all political violence is right wing, comes from white supremacists. It was a white supremacist who killed all those individuals at the AMA church, Emmanuel AMA church. It was a white supremacist who killed those individuals at the Pittsburgh synagogue back in 2018. When you really look at what's happening, it's white supremacists. But now they are trying to erase actual facts and distort what Charlie Kirk is about.
I mean, it's just interesting that you see all the number of people, and I posted a meme about this, but you saw all the number of people who had actual attempts on President Obama, actual attempts on his life.
Yeah.
And not once did the Democratic Party paint the entire Republican Party as the terrorists, as the ones who are about, not once. No. And these were all right-wing, extreme right-wing conservatives who listed the specific reasons of why that they felt that, you know, Obama was, whatever the reason, Antichrist, he was anti, you know, whatever they labeled him as. And that didn't happen. And it's just interesting seeing how the right, they're waiting, like they were hoping that whoever pulled the trigger on Charlie Kirk, whoever was going to be pinned for it, was going to be black or Muslim or of some demographic where they could say, oh, now this is a declaration of war. This is a civil war. And then when they found out who it actually was or who they're placing the blame on, now all of a sudden the civil war is canceled. No more civil war, no more alarm, no more anything else. Move on to the next subject. And it's just that preparing for war. So even in, you know, Jimmy Fallon being you know, suspended indefinitely, they want to control a narrative.
Yes.
And they want the narrative to be that everyone is against them and they're under attack. And now they have to be, and it's really, I don't know if people really understand how dangerous of a place that we are right now. And it seems to be ramping up, not going the opposite way. I had somebody tell me that the Charlie Kirk topic is going to be, you know, dead and gone in a few days. I'm like, no, it's not. This is just the beginning.
That person doesn't know what they're talking about. You know, I do a lot of study of right wingers. I covered rallies, not just Charlottesville, but before that. So I try to understand how white supremacists think. There's a group of white supremacists, the Nick Fuentes Groyper Army, that has been against Charlie Kirk for a very long time. There's splits in the white supremacist movement as well. There are people who would certainly have wanted him dead within the white nationalist movement as well. And, you know, these things aren't being reported. And most people don't actually know about these things. What we have to be clear on is what you just said. And that is the Charlie Kirk story is dangerous, and as dangerous as any story. I might differ a little bit that they moved on. I don't think they moved on. I think they pivoted. They went from this person, they were hoping he'd be black, certainly Muslim. But now that he's white and he has a conflicting story, he has two Republican parents who taught him how to use a rifle. You see pictures of the child with him in an NRA cap. So I wonder when Trump or Vance says we're going to go after organizations that led to this. Are they talking about the NRA? No, I don't think they're talking about the NRA. But the NRA and his gun-loving parents, if he did it, by the way, let him hone those skills to take a shot from over 200 yards away to pull that off. Now, I've heard many actual, like, military individuals who doubt that he took that shot or doubt that he acted alone. So I think what should happen is a lot of patience. And even if their narrative, which turned to, yes, he was a right winger and he went to apprenticeship electric school, electrician school for a semester and was radicalized there, that narrative is selling. And it's a ridiculous narrative. And then they're using anti-trans language. And, you know, we're not going to get all the way into it, but we know it's BS, but we know it's working. So there has to be a counter narrative, and that people have to be fighting the battle of media narratives. That's important. And that's what we do.
100%. 100%. That's why I love what we do here on the Collision of Sports and Politics Collide on WPFW.
But your friend is wrong, Atan. I cannot tell you how much your friend is wrong. These people who think this is going to blow over, they're not studying what's actually happening. And what's happening is a big groundswell to martyr Charlie Kirk and come out and distort his actual true memory.
100%. 100%. I think people are hoping that it blows over.
Yeah, like, they're
people
wrong.
Are hoping that the topic of Mayor Bowser blows over. Yeah. They're hoping that we move along from something else. The same person that told me the thing about Mayor Bowser. That's why I included that topic. But, you know, let's take a break. Let's take a breather. And we're going to come back with more on the Collision where sports and politics collide.
Charlie was a man of faith. He knew where he was going. When his time came, I know that's not what he was planning on because he had so much to live for here. Dan, he was leading, I think, the most important revival that was taking place in our country, and that was young, conservative, Christian people who were on fire for God, who were on fire for Jesus, who were on fire for this country to help get involved in service and the process, and also began to see just that the other side was so different than how they felt about faith and family and the right to life and so many things that we sort of take for granted as part of our DNA. The opposition is pulling farther apart from us and also getting more violent. And I think the reason why they're getting more violent is because, like Charlie Kirk proved every time he debated and had a discussion, he was on the side of right, he was on the side of good, he was on the side of accurate history and you know, for the most part of what he talked about, and they couldn't beat him. And so they killed him, they murdered him, they assassinated him, they eliminated him. But what they didn't realize is they actually didn't. Because he is going to live on. He's going to live on through all of us that followed him, that learned from him. Because here's the deal, Dan. Like, Dan, you are one of the best at what you do. You are. But we all, and I'm pretty good at what I do too. But none of us could touch Charlie. I mean, he had a different gift, and he'll be sorely missed.
Good Lord. Okay. We're back on the Collision of Sports and Politics Collide. What you just heard was head coach of Auburn, Bruce Pearl. And before we go to Bruce Pearl, I want to make a correction. I think I said Jimmy Fallon and I meant Jimmy Kimmel. So everybody knows I wasn't talking about Jimmy Fallon. I was talking about Jimmy Kimmel. Most people that heard knew that was a slip of the tongue. Now, Bruce Pearl, that is the head coach of Auburn. That is the coach where many black parents entrust their children to coach them, to guide them, to teach them about life on and off the basketball court, because that's what a coach's job pretty much does, especially when you're in college. And listening to him, and I've heard him make his statements for the last, you know, maybe few years here. And each one gets worse and worse. Every time he opens his mouth, it gets worse and worse. I would not send my dog to his school. I would be worried about, and it's not just a difference of opinion. You know, when you embrace somebody who is evil, who uses a microphone to literally spray evil everywhere he goes. That's not a difference of opinion. You know what I mean? That you know, we have difference of opinion here on the Collision all the time when we're talking.
Right.
We debate. We just go, that is something completely different. What was your response to hearing head coach Bruce Pearl talk about Charlie Kirk?
My response is the same as your response. And it's humanity, right? We don't debate humanity. We don't debate people's humanity. But what's interesting is that, you know, we hear for years from sports and coaches, you know, keep politics and sports separate. And they use that not to say things about when somebody is shot by police, when a black person is shot by police, when there's racial injustice. But all of a sudden, now you get these sports figures coming out of the woodwork. What I would say is, if there's any black player who is thinking about playing for Bruce Pearl, they may want to actually look at Charlie Kirk's actual record before they sign up with this coach. Because Charlie Kirk did say, if I see a black pilot, I'm going to be like, boy, I hope he's qualified. He did say, if you're a WNBA pot-smoking black lesbian, do you get treated better than a United States Marine? Referring to Brittany Griner. He did say, happening all the time in urban America, prowling blacks go around for fun to target white people. It's a fact. It's happening more and more. He said, I'm dealing with somebody in customer service who is a moronic black woman. I wonder if she is there because of her excellence, or is she there because of affirmative action? And then he did say, and this might lead to Dr. Angel Jones, if we would have said that Joy Reid and Michelle Obama and Sheila Jackson Lee and Ketanji Brown Jackson were affirmative action picks, we would have been called racist. Now they're saying it. You do not have the brain processing power to otherwise be taken really seriously. You had to go steal a white person's slot to be taken seriously. So even if you go to Harvard, even if you go to Ivy League schools like Michelle Obama and Ketanji Jackson Brown, just being a white man who has no education, you are superior by your skin. And we've seen that with Trump. We see that with Charlie Kirk. And we see that with all their followers.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. And I just want to implore all parents, really be careful about who you send to coach your children, because this is a prime example of it matters. You know what I mean? It really does. I want to ask you about the WNBA, because WNBA playoffs started. Yes. And I got to say, I actually turned the channel, from the Minnesota game because I thought it was going to be a blowout.
Yeah.
And it really looked like it was going to be a blowout, like the Liberty game. The Liberty game was a blowout.
Right.
What happened to the Liberty? But then they came back.
You
and
sure
I did. This wonderful comeback. So it was amazing.
I looked at my eyes,
I was like, oh, I missed all of this. But yeah. The WNBA playoffs, they're really, you know, if you're not watching, you're missing something, you know, really great. You're missing great basketball.
That's absolutely right. And it's not just the comeback yesterday. Tonight, by the way, there are two deciding games, because the first round is a best of three in the WNBA. Mm-hmm. So the Fever and the Dream play a deciding game. And then the Aces and the Storm play a deciding game. And the Storm, 2 days ago, made a similar comeback against the Aces, which was pretty incredible and pretty exciting. So they're going back to Las Vegas for a deciding game. And I want to say something about that, mm-hmm. because I feel it was a bit of a coming out party for someone a lot of people don't know, named Dominique Malanga, and who was the number two pick after Paige Beckers. I'm pretty sure people heard Paige Beckers, but not everyone knows the number two pick. And that is because Malanga is only 19 years old, but has been playing professionally for a few years, which you can do outside of the United States. And the ceiling of Malanga is so high. As far as defense, played very strong defense on the MVP, should be MVP, Asia Wilson in the fourth quarter, scored the go-ahead basket. And I would not be surprised in a few years, and you could go back to this tape if I'm wrong or right, in a few years, Malanga is the best player in the WNBA. Should Malanga work on her offensive game? It's raw. But there's some skills there and height there and mobility there that you just cannot teach.
Yeah, no, I mean, so what is your predictions? Give me your predictions for who's going to come out of each series. Oh,
okay, so I think the Aces are going to win. And if they win one, because anyone could win one game, I believe the Aces will win the championship. I believe that if they win. If they don't win tonight, then I think I would have to go with Minnesota. I would have to go with Minnesota going the rest of the way. You know, the Liberty were having trouble in the latter part of the season for a number of reasons. Breonna Stewart was out. But I see Minnesota coming in from the number one and the Aces. But I could look really stupid if the Aces lose tonight. You know, anyone could get hot from three. Anything could happen. So my biggest nerve, my most nervous pick is tonight. But if they get by tonight, I think they won the championship.
I don't see the Aces losing. I do not. Okay. But it. So then it goes back to when we talked about it before. Who is your MVP? Because now I still say that I would be perfectly okay with there being co-MVPs. That's me. Nobody on earth agrees with me when I say this, so don't even worry. Not even my. So I spoke to it with my daughters and in the carpool. And her teammate didn't agree with me. My daughter didn't agree. Yeah. I was like, "Oh, you can't have co-MVPs. You have to pick one." I'm like, why you have to do one? They're both like the way that Nevisha Collins and Angel, Aja has Asia has been playing. I would be fine with both of them. I can't pick one over the other. They both have been magnificent. Like not just really good, but magnificent. So how do you pick one over the other? Tell me.
I do. I disagree with you a ton. I don't think it's as close as people think. I think what happened was after the first half, Aces played so poorly, and no question, the first half MVP was Nafisa Collier. This is no undebatable. And when you set a narrative early on, and then you find out, well, you know what? Nafisa Collier missed a bunch of games. But when she missed the games, they went 7-5 in her absence. When Aja Wilson missed games, they went 1-3. In other words, Minnesota could make the playoffs without Nafisa Collier, as incredible as she is. But when you're talking about Aja Wilson, to win the last 17 games, to put your team on your back from the number 9 seed to reach the number 2 seed, and their record, which people say is different, when they play, it's actually almost identical. They're one game apart. When they play, the disparity in the record is because they did well in the games that Nafisa Collier didn't play in. So I even removed that best player from best team nonsense, which I always felt is nonsense. But look, number one in points, number one in blocks per game, number one in defensive rating, number one in offensive win shares, number one in defensive win shares, number one in PER, that's player efficiency rating. All the advanced stats show up with all the things that Aja Wilson does. So I believe that in most years, Nafisa Collier would win an MVP. Maybe even Alyssa Thomas would win an MVP. Let's just shout out for someone who has 9 rebounds and 9 assists as well. But this year, Aja Wilson is the MVP, and we're not used to it because she had the best year in WNBA history last year. So then she set a standard, which is ridiculous. But in my mind, it isn't as close as others think.
That was good. You know what I mean? I'm still going to stick to that. I wouldn't mind if it was co-MVPs. I'm going to stick to that, but you made a good argument. So how about this? Why don't we go to a quick break? And I'm very excited about our guests. They have so much that I want to talk to her about. And it, you know, goes from just the over policing, the people cannot even talk about the topic without fearing that they're going to lose their jobs, no matter in what frame they have in discussing the topic. So it's crazy because, you know, after they fired Jimmy King,
Jimmy Kimmel.
Now the lady got me all. I'm fumbling even trying to say it right.
Yeah.
Now that they fired Jimmy Kimmel, thank you to the lady who called in, said I got the name wrong. Trump went on and said, oh, that was great. And now we have, you know, 2 more people that we need to fire that are, you know, I'm paraphrasing, but that's what he said. I'm like, wow, you don't even want things discussed. Just like you don't want Epstein files discussed. You want us to move away from that. But that's why the people who are the opposition have to keep discussing it. It cannot go silent because that is literally what they want. They want to put fear in everyone that you even talk about this topic, that you might lose your job, like they've done with Palestine, like they've done with the genocide. And, you know, that's it's happening, and people should worry about the way that everyone is so scared to even talk. I have people that come up to me all the time, Chuck. Literally, I'm at my girl's volleyball game. Literally, I'm in the grocery store. You know, shout out to Wegmans. Love Wegmans. I'm at the car wash, and people come up to me and say, hey, I love the stuff that you post. I'm scared to even like it, but I love the stuff that you post. I'm like, you're scared to even like it. That's where we are in society.
Isn't that the point? It's the Israeli playbook, which you just mentioned. You know, if you get people fearful to speak, say Israel, when you're talking about genocide, call it anti-Semitism. So Trump is using a very well-worn playbook and trying to change the communication, the media itself. And we could get into that another time, because TikTok is about to be bought off and other media is about to be bought off. So they're trying to change the information itself.
They definitely are. So let's go to a quick break, and we'll be back with our guest, Dr. Angel Jones. I cannot wait. Let's go to a break, and we'll be back with more of The Collision, where sports and politics collide.
Joy Reid and Michelle Obama and Sheila Jackson Lee and Ketanji Brown Jackson were affirmative action picks. We would have been called the racist. But now they're coming out and they're saying it for us. They're coming out and they're saying, I'm only here because of affirmative action. Yeah, we know. You do not have the brain processing power to otherwise be taken really seriously. You had to go steal a white person's slot to go be taken somewhat seriously. Play cut 52.
But I rise today as a clear recipient of affirmative action. I'm particularly in higher education. I may have been admitted on affirmative action, both in terms of being a woman and a woman of color, but I can declare that I did not graduate on affirmative action. This is my personal story.
I hear because of action affirmative. She can't even say that. We know. It's very obvious to us that you were not smart enough to be able to get in on your own. I couldn't make it on my own, so I needed to take opportunities from someone more deserving. You know, this is how arrogant Joy Reid and Ketanji Brown Jackson and Michelle Obama and Sheila Jackson Lee are. They're so narcissistic, they think this is persuasive. They think we're like, oh, of course, that's why we need affirmative action, because you have impressed us with your brilliance. Of course. Oh, no. Imagine the world without Joy Reid. Imagine the world without Sheila Jackson Lee or Michelle Obama or Ketanji Brown Jackson. They think this is persuasive. They think, as they kind of now reveal, that I'm only here because of anti-white, anti-Asian forced discrimination policies that turned me into a bitter, resentful activist that hates white people, honestly, through...
Those are the words of Charlie Kirk, and we are back here on The Collision with Sports and Politics Collide. I want to say a quick shout out to WPFW for not being one of those stations that limits what you can talk about or you know, try to get us to be able to steer away from certain topics. And it's really important now more than ever. But we have a brilliant guest on. I am a big fan of hers, Dr. Angel Jones. How are you doing?
I am great. How are you?
I am absolutely great, you know, fired up. I'm glad that you came on. You heard what we just played. Those are the words of Charlie Kirk, you know, specifically talking about black women. And in the context of you have somebody like Karen Ataya, who just was fired from the Washington Post for quoting what we just quoted. That's what she quoted. That's why I wanted to play that in particular. Tell me your response to that and what this actually means in the bigger picture.
You were trying to get me fired up right away. and so I actually played that clip when he first said it. So I feel like I've already been talking about his disrespect for black women. Of course, he did disrespect all marginalized communities, but I think black women specifically. And I feel like, you know, the world wants black women to be silent, period. Right. So, of course, if a black woman is speaking in general, but especially if she's speaking up for other black women, people aren't going to like that. So I'm not surprised that she got fired for posting that specific clip, but it's still infuriating.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Chuck.
Right. He has been talking about all these various groups. And what is your reaction when you're seeing flags at half staff being honored at the Yankee game, being honored at different public venues? You know, how do you receive that?
It's disrespectful. It is a slap in the face to those of us that he has disrespected, those of us whose lives he's put at risk. I am on the professor watch list that was created by Charlie Kirk and Turning Point, and the number of death threats that I've received as a result of being on that list. You know, all of the hate mail, all of the things that my universities have had to do to try and protect me from the consequences of being on that list. It's disrespectful to us, because there's so many of us that are on that list, specifically for speaking the truth and talking back against this revisionist history that the right likes to put out there. So it's hard for me to watch people mourn the death of a man whose actions could lead to the death of people like me.
One of the things that really bothers me as a Christian is the way that they are using, when I say they, I'm talking about MAGA Christians, those are the specific group that I'm talking about, and how they are twisting and contorting the Bible to mean something that is so far from what the teachings of Jesus Christ are. But that part seems especially evil. You know what I mean? I mean, if you're gonna just, you know, spout a lot of hatred and everything like that, but then when you use religion to do that, when you say this is what God wants and cast yourself as a man of God and you keep saying it and a Christian principles and all this different stuff, I'm like, you need to leave Jesus out of this. Jesus ain't got nothing to do with anything that you're talking about. What is your response when you keep hearing that?
They've been doing it since slavery. Right. Like this is not new. Like they purposely wouldn't allow enslaved folks to read, because then we would have known that they were lying about the things that were in the Bible. But I mean, they revised everything. Right. History, the Bible, even all the ridiculous things that Trump says now. Right. They're always going to spin it to mean something else or try to mean something else. So what they're doing right now, they've been doing for centuries, so I'm not surprised by it. But I think there are folks that claim to be Christians and don't even know what the Bible says to begin with. So I feel like that's why it's easier for them to kind of put that narrative out there and folks not really clap back or challenge them, because they haven't actually read the Bible to know what's in there.
Let me just follow up real quick, because one of the things that, and to your point, the things that really bothers me with that is then a lot of people look at that and they say, oh, that's what Christianity is all about. And the people who don't know, the people who are not, maybe not Christian, or don't know the Bible, or don't know what the actual teachings of Jesus Christ is, and they say, oh, they're the representations of Jesus. We're like, no, they are not. No, MAGA Christians have nothing to do. They shouldn't even, they are a whole new created, you know, their God is white supremacy. That is their God. It is not Jesus. I just want to say that really quickly. But go ahead, Chuck.
Well, I think the point made about, you know, going back to slavery, you know, I used to wonder, how did all these Confederate statues of Jefferson Davis pop up? Well, we're seeing it because Charlie Kirk's popping up in real time and being memorialized, which is crazy. I wanted to add one other note, you know, as someone who's really been against Nazis and Nazi rallies and Charlottesville and elsewhere, I've been hit with a stream of hate. But when I compare the hate that I might get, and when I see what women get, and particularly Black women get, it's incomparable. You know, they don't tell me what they're going to do to me before they're going to kill me. They don't do that. And if you go into many women, Black women, Ilhan Omar's feeds, it's the most disgusting thing you could ever imagine. So there really has to be a group protective barrier, whether that's students, whether that's others, that we have to be in great solidarity, but in intentional ways that recognize privilege as well. My question is I saw a post, Dr. Jones, you said, I'm worried for these kids who are being brainwashed. We see these young kids, white kids, they're saying, I am Charlie Kirk. Before you came on, Atan and I were having a debate. He had a friend who said, this is going to blow over. We don't think it's going to blow over. We are concerned as well and want to figure out how to fight back. Can you speak to that post about that, your worry, and about these brainwashed kids and how they're distorting Charlie Kirk's memory?
Yeah, so Charlie Kirkens, the Turning Point Judge, just for folks who don't know, he has chapters at both high schools and colleges. So he was very strategic about making the audience young folks. And especially this generation, they are fired up. They are ready to fight for something. And he gave them something to fight for, even though that something is evil and wrong and bigoted and all of those things. But I think for me, when I think about those kids, like, they're at the most impressionable points of their lives, right? High school kids, college kids as well. So I look at college student, the development theory, right? So in this age group is when they're coming into their racial identity, their gender identity, their sexual identity, their political identity, right? Like, this is the time to educate and mold. And they can either be taught by educators that love them and believe in the truth and want to do that, or they can get brainwashed and indoctrinated by people like Charlie Kirk. And I see those things on campuses across the country. The university that I'm at right now, we have a Turning Point chapter, right? And they had a vigil for Charlie on Friday, right? So just what that does, I feel like, makes me nervous as an educator, as a Black woman professor, as a professor that's on that's on the watch list. I'm always fearful in general because of all the hate and things I get. But this is the first time in my career that I've been fearful of students. And for me, that breaks my heart in a way that I can't even articulate, because teaching is my favorite thing in the whole world. It wakes me up. It makes my heart go pitter patter. Like, it is my purpose. But to be in classrooms now where I'm just like, I don't know if one of these students wants to hurt me. I don't know if one of these students is radicalized by Charlie Kirk. I'm getting chills thinking about it. Like, it's just a very different space to be in, so much so that I made all my classes virtual this week because I was afraid. And like, I want things to die down, but they're not going to die down, right? So my students ask me, hey, Dr. Jones, are we going to go back to in-person next week? I don't know. Like, I honestly don't know, for both my safety as well as the safety of my students who are also very vocal about how they feel about Charlie and his bigotry and things like that. So both of us are in danger. So it's just it's a very weird space to be in right now, and I hate it.
You know, it's interesting. I'm going home to Tulsa, Oklahoma. My high school's having a homecoming, and I'm going to do a panel there. And I'm wrestling with the topics that, you know, because I know that when I open it up to Q&A, this topic is going to come up. I mean, we just had the Department of Education in Oklahoma send out a memo this is supposed to be for last Tuesday, for all of Tulsa Public Schools, all schools in Oklahoma, to take a moment of silence at 12 o'clock noon for Charlie Kirk. So I read it. I was like, wait a minute, this can't be what I just read. Read it again. You know what I mean? I had to have read that wrong. And I read it again, and it was the same thing. Now, the reason why I got it was that a teacher who follows me on Facebook slid it to me in my DMs and said, hey, tell everybody about this because I can't say anything. Because she is in a situation where, of course, if she says something, she'll be fired. And that is the state that everyone is in, is this fear for even discussing the topic. Mm-hmm. So how do you broach this topic, which is the topic of what is being discussed right now amongst students, but how do you broach it from an education standpoint, from a professor standpoint? What do you do? Do you ignore the topic? Do you hope it goes away after a while? Do you know you're moving your classes virtually because you're uncomfortable? You know, you have this pressure from the powers that be that are, you know, threatening you if you talk about this, if you talk about this. How do you deal with this as a professor?
Well, I refuse to let them shut me up. And honestly, because I'm so public on social media, like, even if I didn't say it in my classroom, they would still come for me, right? Like, that's going to happen regardless. And I've leaned all the way into it where I've talked to my students about it. So like, I've shown them in class the videos that I've posted about Charlie Kirk. I've asked them one of my classes, we specifically, it's about fake news, battling misinformation and disinformation, right? So we're talking about it, and we talked about all the people people that, have been fired for celebrating supposedly. So I showed them one of my videos. I was like, do you think I'm celebrating? Right? Like, let's have an honest conversation about it. Talk to them again this week. I was like, I don't know if I'm going to get fired for the things I've posted on social media. Right? But this is my stance. This is, you know, this is what I believe in. So I'm very open with them. Can I lose my job? Possibly. But like I'm working part time now because I haven't been able to find a full time job because of how public and open and honest I am. But it's definitely something I have to be strategic with. But I'm just like, I always say, I believe that fighting for Black lives may eventually cost me my own. Like, I've always said that. But I feel like it might cost me my physical life, my professional life. Like, all of these things are on the line for me. But the truth is just so much more important to me. So I got to do some more hustling on the side. So, you know, pay to pay bills, and then so be it. But I'm an educator. My job is to educate, and I am going to do that.
Let me just follow up real quick, Chuck. Karen Ataya, and going back to her and the fact that she lost her job from The Washington Post for literally quoting Charlie Kirk of what he specifically was saying about Black women. I have to keep repeating that because that is the reason why she lost her job. How do we rally around her? How do people support her? And how does she feel the support? Because we can't keep letting them get away with this, with firing people for literally quoting Charlie Kirk. You know, not even going into depth of the conversation or actually denouncing him, just quoting him. But what should our response be with that? How can we rally around people who are facing that at their places of employment?
Folks need emotional support, but they need financial support too, right? Like, you know, like, yes, sis, like I'm out here, I'm talking about her, I'm gonna do those things, but like we need to like make sure that she's financially supported as well. But I think when it comes to companies like this, like we need to hit them financially, right? So overnight, you know, a lot of folks were canceling their Hulu and their Disney Plus and things like that because Jimmy got canceled or fired. We need to do the same thing with the Post and places like that, right? So there are all of these companies across the country that are firing people because of this. We need to make those companies public. Like we need to know which companies those are so that way we can stop supporting those companies. Just like we did with Target, right? Like Target was tripping and we were like, oh, bet, watch. You know, and I think like that's the only way companies listen is when it's their bottom line.
Oh yeah. And I love that you mentioned Target in DC. There's been every Saturday, 11 a.m. Columbia Heights, there is a Target boycott and it's been working and they've been losing a lot of money. So I really feel that what you just said is the way forward as well. On that subject with supporting Karen Ataya, yourself, anybody who's been wrongly discriminated for speaking the truth, what are some of the other levers and some other methods we can do to fight back, whether it's other boycotts or beyond boycotts? How do we mobilize against this mobilization?
I think we need other folks that aren't afraid to tell the truth too, right? Like, why does it always have to be Black women, right? Like we're tired, right? Like it would be great if other folks are doing it too, especially folks that are in privileged positions, right? Like white men, like open your mouths, right? I feel like, you know, it's just so, it's easier for folks with privilege to speak out, but they're choosing not to, right? So I feel like we shouldn't need privileged folks to validate what it is we're saying. But like I always say, like, don't stand in solidarity with me, move in solidarity with me. Mm. Like, I need you to do something. I need you to speak truth to power just like I am doing.
I think that's great. All right, we have a little bit of time left and I want to touch on this topic. We just had a takeover in DC. It was the National Guard was walking the streets of DC, pulling people over, snatching, you know, people up, and Trump applauded it. Now the overall feeling in DC, if you talk to any activists, if you talk to any protester, if you talk to literally anybody in DC, there's a certain feeling about our mayor. And they don't believe that Mayor Bowser has been supporting the people. They believe that she has acquiesced to Trump's desires, that she's almost lockstep and key with Trump. She is not doing like how we see Governor Westmore, who is very vocal, and you know exactly where he stands. She's not doing how the mayor of Chicago, you know exactly where he stands on this topic. And the excuses that is often given is because, well, D.C. is different. We don't have a statehood that can come in and take it over, federally. And, you know, so they have to be able to, you know, Mayor Bowser has to be able to play a certain long game in order to be able to, not have the city completely taken over. That's the excuse that we've been hearing. Do you buy that, or where is your position on it?
She's a politician. And I think we're seeing very much so that she is a politician. And I do believe that part of it is out of her hands in terms of what she can and cannot do. But I do believe that she's playing the game. I don't think she's playing our game, but I think she's playing the game. But I also think it's important to acknowledge the fact that she is a woman. She is a Black woman versus the other folks, right? So like Westmore and like the guy in Chicago, right? Like that's always going to make it a different dynamic, right? So I think about the things that I receive, the death threats and the hate mail and stuff like that. I can only imagine what she receives, right? So I think it's important to think about the role that race and gender play as well. I don't agree with the things that she's been saying, aside from her condemning ICE. Like she's been very, very vocal about that aspect of it, but I do feel like she has acquiesced to Trump a lot more than I anticipated and like and approve of. But I do think that there are other dynamics that we can't leave out of the conversation when it comes to the fact that she is a Black woman versus some of the other mayors and governors in the country that have been able to fight back in a different way.
Chuck, your response.
Yeah, well, my response is to ask about the response, which is we saw in the last 30 days of the occupation, incredible outpouring of people coming out. We've seen cop watches. We've seen veterans come out. We have seen go-go parties, which are people are in the street and resisting the federal takeover on many levels. Is there anything that you have seen from a resistance point of view when the government fails you on some level of how the people can move and what we could learn from and others learn from when Trump goes to their city?
And I hate that we even say when Trump goes, because he's going to, right? Like this is what he's doing. Chicago, he talked about Memphis. I've been so proud of DC. I've been so proud. So I live in the DMV, and I've just been so proud to like see what folks are doing. While I was in grad school, I lived in Columbia Heights. So like, I feel like that was a hotbed for it, especially in terms of the federal takeover. Plus ICE was already tripping over there. Like just to see folks rally around each other has been a beautiful thing to see. Of course, I would prefer that we didn't need to do these things. But I feel like there's been so much power in it. And I feel like if other states move the same way and like really rally around each other, I think it definitely helps. And I feel like especially as a marginalized person, like you feel alone and unseen and unheard, but to have folks rally around, if like just that for your spirit does something, right? It shows you that you do matter. Even though Trump wants to continue to make us believe that we don't matter, I feel like in DC specifically, what that has looked like has been, to me, really, really amazing.
That's great. That's great. No, well, thank you for coming on. We're going to have you on again. And we, you know, I want to know a little bit more about how we can support you. This whole notion of this new thing where everyone is so scared to really speak on different topics is going more and more in this way. I mean, to the people who come to me and say they're scared to even like my posts, this is not the way that it's supposed to be. This is not the way it's supposed to be in this country. You're not supposed to be scared. Like if somebody says something to you outside, they look around and they whisper. Like they literally whisper, like somebody's right here watching you. This is not normal. And this has only been year one. We have 3 more years of this cat. But listen, we're going to keep doing what we can here on WPFW to spread the word, have wonderful guests like Dr. Jones. And, that's again, I have to have a shout out to WPFW because, you know, we need outlets that are going to allow you to have these discussions. And you can't have this discussion on most outlets right now. So thank you for that. I'm going to take us right out because we went a little bit long, but thank you, everybody.
Thank you, Dr. Jones. Thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate you.
Appreciate it, Dave. We'll see you when you get back. And we'll see you next time on The Collision where Sports and Politics Collide.
Can I Kick It outdoor summer movie series presented by Shaolin Jazz is back and is coming to Southeast DC for the first time ever. Enjoy 3 nights of martial arts and action films scored live with hip hop, soul, and more, mixed by WPFW alum DJ Two Tone Jones. Saturday, September 20th at Skyland Town Center with the screening of Berry Gordy's The Last Dragon. Then on Saturday, October 25th, the series concludes with the screening of I'm Going to Get You Sucker at the Capitol Hill Boys Club Artist Gallery. Each event begins at 7 p.m. with a guest DJ set, followed by the movie at 8:30 p.m. Blankets and lawn chairs are welcome. For more details, visit shaolinjazz.com. shaolinjazz.com.
This is Ronald Hampton, convener of IBW's Police Justice and Accountability Task Force. Are you sick and tired of Trump's occupation of Washington, D.C. and other chocolate cities around the country? IBW is convening an emergency summit to address this urgent issue. Saturday, September the 27th, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, sharp at the historic New York Avenue Presbyterian Church, 1313 New York Avenue Northwest in Washington, D.C. Speakers include Dr. Julian Malveaux, Sonia Pruitt, Kimon Freeman, Denise Rolock Barnes, and more. That's Saturday, September the 27th, 1 p.m. sharp at the historic New York Avenue Presbyterian Church. Doors open at 12:30 p.m. Details at IBW21.org.
The United Black Community presents the 21st annual Love Supreme, a musical, poetic birthday tribute to another Ruth, John Coltrane, featuring the NASA Abaday Quintet, Cindy Brown, Kenny Carroll, Nana Malaya, and more on Friday, September 19, 2025 at 7 p.m. at eLife Restaurant, 9033 Central Avenue, Capitol Heights, Maryland. Details, UBC and DC at yahoo.com, 240-832-7203. Thank you.
WPFW presents Genius plus Soul equals Ray and John. Tuesday, September 23rd, 5 a.m. until midnight. This will be a fundraising birthday tribute like no other, illuminating the lives and contributions of Ray Charles and John Coltrane, two icons of American music. Schedule and details at WPFWFM.org, where you can also contribute anytime. WPFW, preserving the culture, one broadcast at a time.
Appeal Incorporated presents its 8th annual Founders Day celebration with dinner and a show on Sunday, September 28th at 4 p.m. featuring Sahel, Anna Mualago, Bamani Arma, Kaba Soul Singer, and DJ One Love at the Thurgood Marshall Center, 1816 12th Street Northwest. Details, including how to join virtually, at appealinc.org or 800-711-7851.
The Birchmere presents The Robert Cray Band, September 24th. Arturo Sandoval, September 28th. And The Whispers on October 10th and 11th. Details at thebirchmere.com. RobertDiaz.com.
No social justice issue or movement can escape the spotlight of the Latino Media Collective. The Latino Media Collective delivers consequential coverage from the biggest countries in South America to the smallest enclaves of Central America and the Caribbean, and is available on SoundCloud, iTunes Podcast, and Google Play Music.